Good morning. Today is Tuesday, the 28th of December. Joining us this morning, Fortuna City Manager. Yes, I'm working today, even though it's snowy and cold outside. Merritt Perry. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
So, do you guys having to deal with any of the white stuff? I know it's kind of up a little bit higher today than it was yesterday.
Yeah, not so much. You know, it's around. I think it's a pleasant amount, but, you know, at least at the city, we're not having to deal with too much.
Yeah, it's a pleasant amount unless you're in Blue Lake or Willow Creek.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of funny how that goes, huh?
Yeah. A friend of mine up on Neyland said he's ready for it to be gone already, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a little bit of interference when it was coming down yesterday.
Yeah, it's nice when it comes down for a couple of hours and it's white and then it goes away and you're back to green.
All right. I just realized we got categories in this book.
Oh,
so we're
in
the world of entertainment, yeah.
It's not even a new year and we're into a new book.
A new book. Well, it's kind of started with Advent. Okay, let's see if we can find something here. Ah, pull strings. Why do we say pull strings?
I would say like a marionette or a puppet, and someone is manipulating another to do things. So that would be pulling someone's strings.
That's
my two for the last two.
I know that's kind of frightening, isn't it? anytime a deal is pending, it helps to have a friend who knows how to pull strings. We use this expression to indicate the use of influence because string pullers were among the earliest popular entertainers. No one knows where the art of puppetry originated, but it reached an early peak in France. A veteran performer could make a marionette, or Little Mary, which is kind of a weird thought, but okay, a marionette, execute movements so complicated that it seemed to be alive. Most spectators knew that a showman pulled the strings that made the puppet bow or dance. Since the hands of the puppeteer were out of sight, his actions were compared with behind-the-scenes manipulation of any sort, and a long-lasting impression was born.
That was easy.
Oh boy, I suppose that specter is still out there, that decisions are made maybe not in smoke filled anymore, but behind the scenes, you know, and votes are pretty well established, and then you go to the public session and you go through the protocols and the check boxes, and then the vote is taken and we move on. How far from wrong is that?
You know, maybe at some organizations it goes that way, but I think, you know, certainly not in the city. That's not how things are done. We respect the process, and I don't think it happens. I mean, our process is so formulaic at this point where, you know, we understand what we can communicate and how many council members. You know, you can't have more than two that you talk about a certain subject. It goes on the agenda. And it's
yeah, but one of the strategies you hear about is 101 on 101 on 101 on 101.
That would be a serial Brown Act violation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so that is also illegal.
Yeah, you can't. You know, and it's kind of the fun. I mean, if for one thing, it's wrong, so we wouldn't do that. But for the second thing, you know, it adds an element of surprise. Like, you really don't know. And one of the things that I've found and honestly been surprised by is that the elected officials oftentimes are in touch with the public and they make good decisions, and to try to manipulate something and have a predetermined decision, you know, I don't know. It takes out the key piece. And to me, it's interesting.
The fun part.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, I think staff has a pretty good understanding of what the council and what the public want to see. But there's times when they don't. And there's been decisions made by the council that I don't agree with that later. I'm like, okay, I think they were in line with the public. They know what the community wanted. So to me, you'd be shortcutting a process, and I like the element of uncertainty of not knowing what all the council members are going to say. Just like, you know, so it's like trying to, you know, play a hand of cards. You know, they're going to go for this, but you don't really know.
I prefer to think of the choo-choo train. I think I can.
You don't want to be off base. You do your best, and that's part of the job that makes it fun, is you got a little bit of element of surprise in every decision.
Now, with staff decisions, okay, that kind of makes sense. You know, long term, they're tapped in. But for specific items where I think one of the games that's often played is we drag something out until like a developer, not that you guys experience this, but until a developer finally gets frustrated enough or it's costly enough, they go, I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But there's never a decision made. It's
that's
the elongated public hearing processes and ways that you can kill projects without ever really bringing them to a vote.
Yeah, you know, that's true. Certainly that could happen, and you could just hand people the zoning ordinance and say, hey, figure it out. Good luck to you. That's not what we do. We really try to...
No, but you can see that game being played in jurisdictions you can see that throughout the state.
And, you can see it happen. I mean, if staff really doesn't like a project for some reason and thinks it's wrong for the community, you'd have to have a developer really understand the rules as good as staff and be able to push it and justify why they're doing something or why it's acceptable and make that case to the planning commission or council. But, you know, we recognize that a lot of investment goes into developing projects up front. So we start out often and recommend that folks come in when they have a project and do a pre-application meeting. And we let them know, you know, people always want to be able to put a cost to what their project is. They know what revenue they can generate from their business, but they don't know how much it's going to cost exactly. And they want to find what those, you know, improvements are going to be or what the process is going to be. Is it how much risk, you know, what parts are discretionary? So we try to lay out the whole process. We try to identify, here's the improvement. So like our engineering department will run through and say, here's what exactly you need to do for storm drain. Here's the modeling that you need to have done. Here's what we expect. And so that's one of the areas we really try to focus with new developments is really being clear with what the expectations are. And I think we're doing a really good job of that right now.
This may be the wrong word to use.
Yeah.
But are there sympathies for the guy or gal? This is, you know, we're running into a word that's called developer.
Yeah.
Trying to build a house.
Yeah.
So I'm not a developer. I want a house.
But
I mean, the whole terminology, the first time
through.
You're
assuming there's a negative connotation. A developer, you know, for us, that's somebody who's coming in and bringing an investment. That's not a bad word in Fortuna. You know, we like
kind of like capital.
To me, you know, I look at everybody coming in with these projects as somebody who's making an investment in the community, and you really need to think about it and consider it.
We'll take it from there when we come back. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry. Merritt, we were talking before the break a little bit about having a project, whether it's commercial or residential, probably, or industrial, probably is all interchangeable at this point. When somebody comes in, what should be that experience? You know, when a guy flies into town and says, I'm looking at this property, you know, you don't know him from a hole in the wall, mm-hmm. but he's talking about dropping a number of zeros into Fortuna to make this project happen. Okay. Is it open arms? Is it let's go get lunch and talk about what you're looking to accomplish? What is the normal interaction at that first level?
You know, I think the mindset is and should be more like a referee. So, you know, staff should be looking at their project, you know, seeing what it is, and then really just interpreting whether it's a general plan or the zoning ordinance. And those things really are the community's vision through the council that have been established as how development will proceed in the city. And so I think, you know, the analysis and the back and forth should be on the different aspects of the project and how they either conform or don't conform, or they, you know, what the challenges would be, whether it's infrastructure, you know, what the special studies would be, what the what the process is going to be for approval, and then staff's feedback on, is this consistent with, you know, the general plan or the zoning ordinance?
Is that like timelines
why
and things
why not?
Like that that are discussed at that point, or is that kind of a couple steps down the road?
Well, most folks come in and they want to know, okay, is, you know, can I do this project, yes or no, with certainty? And if it's not with certainty, they want to know, what's the discretionary process? How long can I get to a meeting, right? Time is money. When you hire engineers, it takes a lot of time to, you know, how people want to converge very quickly and know what it's going to cost to build whatever it is they're going to build. So, you know, that, and I think the more information you can give folks up front, your interpretation of the general plan and zoning ordinance, you know, the idea of the pathway and the timeline, that's the key piece. And there's always things, and there's, you know, that require a judgment call. Does this fit or doesn't it? It's not always black and white, you know, and there is some language that, you know, in our zoning ordinance, if it isn't one of these uses, then it, you know, it would follow, it can, it, you know, it may require a conditional use permit, or it would require a conditional use permit if it's not specifically enumerated. So
I suppose may versus will.
Well, just there's not really a lot of
word,
may. That was
a
my
couple
slip.
Of places, yeah. You know, where you kind of go, okay, this is an issue. It can go either way.
Right.
And you just identify where those points are through the process.
Yeah. And again, I think you need to remember that there's, you know, the council is elected by the people. The planning commissioners are appointed by the council, and you have to trust their judgment and what's right for the community. So, you know, I've had this conversation with our other community development staff a number of times. You know, this is a planning commission decision. This is not our decision, you know, a staff decision. Bring it to the planning commission. That's why they're there, you know, and it's nice. I mean, I think of it as a relief valve. You know, I don't, you know, if you don't know and you're not comfortable with the decision, roll it uphill. Those are the hard ones. Send those.
You've heard the phrase "Olay defense," right? You have. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that's how the system's supposed to work. And
how much weight does the recommendation carry, plus or minus?
That's interesting. It depends. It would be the short answer. A lot of times, the recommendation would have some analysis of, you know, what is being proposed, what the ordinance says. And so it's broken down into smaller pieces, and hopefully you can be, you know, look at them and say true or false. There's things that come down.
Supporting arguments.
Yeah. Why are we doing this thing? And, yeah, you know, one of the ones our planning commission struggled with recently is we have some of the housing mandates that are coming from the state. So we brought our accessible dwelling unit ordinance, which essentially the state law changed. And I can't remember what SB it was. 62, I can't remember. Excuse me, but our planning commission didn't like the state using its authority to say, hey, people can build one of these without a discretionary process by the city if it conforms with these following, you know, dimensions
really,
and sizes.
It overrides this local plan?
Yes. If you're accessory, you know, if you don't allow accessory dwelling units within your zoning ordinance, and the state law would supersede. And there's a process.
So you are going to have a mother-in-law unit.
We did. We updated
potential
it. Yeah.
One way, whether you want to or not, it's going
to
be
people
there.
Could say, well, your city ordinance is not in conformance with state law, and therefore we go by state law. So if we didn't update it and apply the discretion where we thought was important, you know, one of the areas we're looking at is, you know, you don't want overhanging balconies right over someone's backyard, right? Like, people want their privacy, and you have to do your best to do no harm with what's being imposed on you at the city level. So
yeah, the existing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one where planning commission, they struggled and they didn't want to adopt it. And I think some of our council members struggled with it, but ultimately, you know, the state looks at the housing elements that are developed by cities, and they want you to be able to generate housing. And in the housing elements, there's a number of policies and that you have to implement to be in conformance with, to comply with your
density related,
all kinds of things. There's a lot of different things in there, a lot of different programs, mostly just to create housing. And so the state will come down and you're not in compliance, and you know, you could be sued. So it's something that we really have to make sure to, once we have that plan in place, is to comply with it. But some of the things that are in there are only because they've become state law, not necessarily what the city would have done without it.
Well, and often it's something that is applicable for another community, but it's kind of foisted. And it's design.
Yeah.
You know, if something's designed properly, a lot of times there's not an issue anymore.
Yeah. Well, the tricky part is, one of the pieces of that is you can't require new parking, and you can't charge an impact fee for water or sewer. So,
well, we'll talk about fees when we come back. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry from the city of Fortuna. Grandfathered is something that is a kind of a magical word, depending on what side of the ledger that you're on. You were talking about, you know, well, in downtown on Main Street, you know, you had the fire, the old hotel's gone, the rebuild back. Okay, he had to worry about today's rules, not when the house or when the structure was originally built. Okay, most people can kind of follow that one. But if you got two structures on either side of you, and now you're going to be the guy in between, is there any ability to reference the other ones at all, or is it new construction is this and old construction is that, and there is no recognition?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what you're talking about. If there's limitations on design, if it's a design standard or just the appearance, the way something looks, there's certainly the ability to go for a variance, you know, whether it's height or width or setback. You could have a, you know, an example.
Yeah,
where
setbacks would be probably one that would be relatively common. Or you mentioned parking.
Yeah.
Okay, if I'm just replacing a building
that
got
the same square footage that burned down, then, yeah, there's certainly a discretionary process, you know, if there's a variance from what the new standards are. But the one that I don't think there is any flexible is building code. Those are really life safety type issues and construction.
Yeah, safety is a different ballgame.
Yeah, no flexibility there, but definitely design elements and design standards. There's the ability to ask for a variance.
So let's say, not that there is, but there's a piece of property that was a building 20 years ago. So it's not in current use, but it's just kind of a plot of dirt. Somebody buys a plot of dirt and wants to put a building in. Parking variance potential or not?
Yeah, you know, it depends.
Because now there's historically there hasn't been something there for the last little bit
right,
of time.
So there's a gap in time. And so what you're looking at is your baseline is what the existing condition is the key word. So yeah, those are the ones where you really, you know, it takes a judgment call.
Is it a use? See, if I'm putting in a dental facility or something that has very little foot traffic.
Right.
Versus something that has 20 people coming in an hour.
Yeah.
A restaurant of sort.
Well, there's parking.
That's going to be different.
Yeah. So there's parking standards, and the number of spaces, depending on the types of use, are generally pretty easy to define. So that one doesn't come up a lot. The one that I see that's a little tricky, drive-thrus. How much queuing space do you need for drive-thrus? You know, and those become more of a judgment call.
Turnaround? Or just
queuing, you know, McDonald's, Starbucks, you know,
right.
Typical fast food or drive-thru places. Some can really stack up, and they may show, you know, where for one use, three or four might seem like enough. You know, sometimes eight or nine is not enough, depending on what it is. And so
it's not the width of the cars.
It's how many
in line.
That's right.
Okay.
And you don't really know. So there's been some projects approved for drive-through coffee shops that we've had ongoing problems that we've had to work to mitigate. You know, recently we had a fast food restaurant that did an upgrade, and we had the opportunity to look at their storage length in the lines. And so we're using that more as a baseline because it seemed to work. We haven't had issues, and it's a very popular fast food restaurant. So it's
it's kind of the most active
example. There's not a specific requirement in the zoning ordinance that says you shall have this many you know, the storage length for a fast food restaurant or a drive-thru. So that's one that you really, you know, we have to rely on judgment. Or, you know, if we don't know, then a traffic study and what, you know, have the applicant tell us, here's what they expect to have, here's why they need a certain length. And then we'd look at that traffic study and say, okay, we agree or we don't agree, we think this is realistic or not. And, you know, that's gets tricky when you have an engineer's opinion, you know, and you have to look at it and evaluate that for whether it's applicable in your city.
And is it a neutral or is it an advocate's position?
Well, I think the position is, well, it's twofold. I mean, part of, you know, you always have to be realistic and ethical, but the other part is you want to make sure the new project isn't impacting the community, because if a new project comes in,
yeah, you don't want to be negative.
Creates a traffic mess, that's a problem. And I think that's where, you know, a lot of agencies and jurisdictions probably get stuck, is they get very protective because they don't want to make a mistake that's very public like that. So you can become very conservative on your decision-making process to the point that you put requirements in that are unrealistic. And
well, and the initial wave is radically different than what it's going to be in 6 months. Right? Everybody wants to check out the new restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just kind of settles into whatever it's going to be and it carries on.
Right. And so everybody raises hell initially, and then it kind of, people get used to it. And there's that, too. I mean, it's a change in the environment, and you really just have to do your best to evaluate whether it's going to create an impact or not. And it's hard to know exactly, even with engineering studies. Yeah, whether there will be or there won't be for the long term.
So as you look at now what the general plan is, would you prefer to have it as it currently is, or would you like to have a delineation for queuing lines? If restaurant is going to, X is going to have a drive-through or a pharmacy, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of drive-throughs anymore. Here's the standards, and if it's X number of vehicles an hour, here's what's needed. And if it's more, then you just kind of work up the ladder.
I guess my preference would see it based on what the actual volumes are expected for a particular business. You know, if you have one set thing, then you get a small coffee shop that has a few customers, and then you tell them they need 20 queuing spots, they're not going to be happy and their business won't work. You know, so.
Well, and the other question, Merritt, is, okay, is that an annual? Is that a daily? Is that an hourly? Because everybody's got their peak hours.
Yeah.
And everybody's got their off hours. Well, which do you use as your reference point then?
Yeah. Typically for traffic, you use the peak hour. So that's commuting hours. That's when intersections and roadways normally are the most
challenged. So not the business's peak hours.
Yes.
The roadway's peak hours.
Right. But you have to look at both. And now people aren't just using, you know, level of service. It used to be the common way to evaluate, you know, and that was like an A through F. How long does it take to get through an intersection or a roadway? But really looking at how it functions. You could, you know, an example of a coffee shop that was put in years ago in Fortuna, they back folks up onto a roadway that's used to access some homes. And so those homeowners really don't like having to wait for the coffee line to get to their house.
Right.
So... I don't understand why. No.
Yeah,
So we've tried to work with them to reconfigure it, even though it was approved long ago for a smaller business that's done well and expanded. And, you know, so you can't tell them, hey, go away. They have their entitlements, but you have to do your best to kind of work through how can we create a queue that doesn't impact the adjacent residents.
So if you're talking about design, typically then there's cost and associated time.
Yeah.
Does the city step up and help to... either meet halfway or do something?
Well, once it's approved and they've done the improvements, that's why it's tricky. If you don't think of every possible outcome and impact, and then there's an impact, the city's left holding the bag. You can't have somebody come in and do more things. You can attach performance standards to a conditional use permit.
What does that mean?
Well, you won't allow a condition like this to happen, right? So you can put specific language in about...
Coffee shop, yes. Hamburger joint, no.
But then that's tricky because it's subjective. You'd have to go back and interpret the conditional use permit. But you can put, another one, another example is like a transfer station. You can limit how much traffic they have coming in by the number of tons. So you could put a tons per day limit, and that will limit how much queuing and traffic you have.
But not so many cups of coffee a day.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And, you know, you don't want to...
Because one guy could have four.
That's right.
You have four guys having one. Yeah.
You don't want to limit a business. So you do your best to look at what other successful coffee shops have done, and you try to apply a standard that's fair and reasonable.
Roll the dice, build 10%, and go. Let's go. KINS, news and information. Speaking of going, it's 8:44.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with four airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on AHA, American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Reno, and Las Vegas. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Merritt Perry from Fortuna. Merritt, all of this stuff is cool. And one of the things that I find interesting is that planning commission meetings don't tend to get an awful lot of attention unless it's a major project defined as aggressive in favor and aggressive in opposition, or it's your project.
Right.
And you're there. Other than that, it just kind of happens. But every once in a while, the media gets involved. Do they, we, I don't know if I'm part of it or not. I suspect I probably am.
Your media, I would say.
Yeah, okay. Do they know enough to be able to accurately discuss the topic?
Does that ever matter?
there are those that it doesn't. And there are those projects that aren't that critical, but I'm thinking like the LNG plant. I'm thinking about the windmill things. Some of these are unique programs to our area, and boy, unless you're a scientist or very, very well in these things, it's tough to really portray things and to explain. Yeah, that's kind of why I'll throw out these roadblocks to you guys. You start using your alphabet soup here and say, time out. We don't know that stuff.
Yeah, when you have differing opinions of experts, different experts each saying different
things.
Yeah,
and then you get into that element of it also.
Then it gets down into the science. And
science seems to be subjective these days also.
There can be, in the examples you brought up, like the windmill piece, like that was a very hard decision for the community.
That would be windmill one.
Right, or two, either one.
Now we got two coming up. Yeah.
Those are tough. You really have to be analytical, and then you have to be in touch with what the community feels, and you have to make your best decision. They can be really tough, and I think if things sail through and people aren't upset with what's happening, then things are working right. But when you have those ones,
put a nice little dose of emotion in there, though, and things get whipped up pretty good, because you got both sides being emotional, kind of wanting their perspectives to be shared.
Yeah, it's the controversial projects that really bring things to a head and get media attention. And
that's where you cut your chops.
Yeah, and I think there's some folks in the media who do a better job than others trying to portray the topic. A lot of people will actually read it, and some reporters have quite a scientific mind and analyze it and come with really good questions, and others, they just want the headline that's is very black and white without getting too deep. So I think you see the range in media of how they analyze different projects that come through, or how they report on different projects that come through.
I suppose one of the toughest ones is when they don't have that much life experience. So you can't fall back. Some of us know hairs or gray hairs.
Yeah.
Okay, we've done the rodeo three or four times. We kind of know the general. Somebody who's in their 20s, oftentimes, they might have experience.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, it's not there yet.
Yeah, and sometimes, I guess not to put everybody in the same box, but some of the younger folks, they really come in learning and wanting to know, and they ask a lot of questions. And I think sometimes those might be easier interviews with more seasoned folks. They come in and they can get right to the point, and they know right where the rub is, and they want to explore that.
Yes.
So
the wound, I believe, is what it's called.
Yeah. So, and that's what's interesting, right? Where does the rubber hit the road? It takes a while for reporters to get to that point where they know right where it is.
Well, and staff also to understand where they're coming from as well.
That's right.
Well, maybe you'll have a calm day today. What do you think?
I hope so.
All right. Well, we'll see what we stirred up for you. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
Happy New Year. See everybody tomorrow.